Welcome back to another episode of Training Talk with Matt Fox and Max Frankel. We are going to be moving the Training Talk podcast moving forward into the Shareholders Club. If you haven't joined the Shareholders Club, you can find a link at the sweatelite.co website in the menu. And moving forward, the action that covers all of the news and the different topics of interest going on in the sport will be moved onto the public Sweat Elite podcast feed moving forward. So this is the final public-facing Training Talk episode moving forward. Max, how are you doing? And how has your pillar performance been treating you over the last week?
Fantastic. I'm on a new flavor. I'm on the pineapple coconut flavor you brought me when you were here in Boulder. I'm on the pineapple coconut flavor. I've tossed in the tropical flavor. I'm really just all about the flavors, to be honest. At this point, I've been seeing the benefits. Last night, I'm in a bit of a hectic training week this week. I actually announce what I've got going on.
Yeah, dude.
I've been meaning to have a chat with him before announcing, just to get him looped in if he wanted to be, but I'm sure that can come in the future. I am incredibly excited to announce that I'm now training under fellow Sika Sweat Elite Coaching Academy coach and head triathlon coach Casper Pedersen. I've been working with Casper for a little under a month now. And I think, first of all, I think it's just really fun that the three of us, we are missing Clara, but that the other three of us at Sweat Elite Coaching Academy are all working together. I think that for the listeners out there, I don't know what more evidence you want than as far as our belief in each other, than the fact that we're being coached by each other. I think the only thing that's left is for Matt to coach Casper. And I think that after we do that, we've completed this circle. But yeah, I'm really excited. I've actually been a little injured running the last couple of weeks. I have a physio appointment coming up after this, and I'm actually going to be running on the treadmill the first time in a couple of weeks. I've been dealing with a calf injury and some minor tear, really just excessive tightness and some nerve damage in my post-tib and my gastroc soleus area, just in my calf. But yeah, Casper's got me on a diet where we're upping the volume and bringing it back to pillar performance. The last few days, I've just been dealing with getting through training, coaching all my athletes, putting out great content. And as a result, I had to do my swim yesterday, more towards the evening. It really wiped me. The pool that I was training in was excessively warm. I had some max sprint efforts to do, some max out 75s, some max 50s, some max 25s. And by the time I was done with that, I was like, my heart rate variability has got to be trash. And I went to the store, made myself some dinner, finally got to bed, and then had to wake up and start get training in. First part of training in today before we recorded. And if I hadn't taken my pillar performance last night, there's no way I could have gotten through my session this morning after the chaos of the last 24 hours. But Casper will be pleased to see in my training peaks that session went pretty well, all things considered. And yeah, I have to say, if recovery is moving in the right direction, then pillar performance is going to continue to be a part of my routine, my recovery routine, and I'm really stoked to have it. So yeah, and I like the flavor.
You have become the master at just naturally integrating ads. I have to finish off this section. I was going to say it earlier, but you just got on a roll there. We do have a promotion code at Pillar Performance. They are the sponsor of this podcast episode. Sweat15 will get you a 15% off your first order directly at Pillar Performance. And if you're in the USA, you get that directly from the feed with the same promo code. So do go check it out. I've been taking it basically every day. Sometimes I run out on the road and have to wait a week or two to get some more. Max is on it. It's definitely helpful for sleep and recovery. But Max, what is your racing? Do you have any races coming up?
Yeah, so my first race of the season, I might be doing a couple local cycling races here in Colorado. And here in Colorado, local cycling races, if you're in the pro/Cat 1 category, they are pretty heated. We can see guys who've raced in the World Tour turn up. Those races can be pretty tough, but might be doing a couple of those for training. First triathlon is going to be the second USA Triathlon Elite Development Race for athletes 25 and under in my actual hometown of Richmond, Virginia, coming up May 5th. It's a super sprint, which if you are at all familiar or unfamiliar with triathlon race distances, the Olympic distance triathlon is a 1500 meter swim, 40K bike, and a 10K run. Sprint, which is raced quite often at the World Series level as well for draft legal triathlon, which is what I compete in, is a 750 meter swim, 20K bike, 5K run. So just half of the Olympic. But the super sprint is a format that's rarely seen outside of the mixed team relay, which is an Olympic event. It's rarely seen for individuals, but USA Triathlon likes to throw it in. I'm in there on the elite development path with USA Triathlon. So this is the race that I'm doing. It's a 375 meter swim, 10K bike, and a 2.5K run. And Matt, I actually credit you with helping me overcome a bit of a mental block that I had when this sort of calf injury popped up. You were one of the first people I talked to when I had my last run session that really didn't get off the ground. And what you helped me realize is that this race is so short that it's really that acute run fitness for me right now is honestly not a huge thing. If I can get my bike and my swim are in really good places, then I hope to just start that 2.5K really fresh. And for 2.5K distance, it's probably less, assuming you're a decent runner and you have enough running in the legs in the last 6 months, that you'll be fine. It's really about just getting to that as fresh as possible. And I think that's going to be really key for my race is it's actually the swim and bike fitness are more important for the run than the run fitness. Because if I can get to the run with less fatigue, I only need to run for hopefully under 8 minutes. And yeah, under 8 minutes running about, you know, and yeah, if I'm fresh from the swim and the bike, then I trust that the legs will be there. But I'm really excited to give it a go. Always excited to race my hometown. But then after that, it's just back to a build. Casper and I are on a sort of multi-year plan right now. And we'll be doing some more racing this summer. But really, the focus is going to be trying to take a long view and just be really patient. So yeah, my training looks a little different than yours. I'm on an over volume build to really high volume, more volume than I've really ever done in triathlon. Whereas you're running less than you've run in years. And why don't we just take a second before we get into going over the recent sessions? You're coming into the first marathon that you'll be doing under this sort of new program. It's not going to be an all-out effort, but you've done a half marathon at probably about 85-90% effort. Now you're going to be doing a marathon. How are you feeling about things thus far?
I am very confident in what we have come up with here. And I'm almost becoming more confident as time goes on. And I think my confidence was even boosted further.
What's the right word? The right word.
By a workout that I did the other day. So I think one concern that I had, it wasn't a big concern, but it was a slight concern, was if we focus so much on this speed and this, and so for those that are, I'm assuming people aren't tuning in for the very first time to this, but the very short story is I'm using the first 6 or 7 months of this year to basically run as fast as I can over an 800 or a mile. Max likes to use the 800 meters. I think it's because I was an 800 meter runner. I actually do understand entirely your philosophy in trying to basically run as quick as you can over around about 2 minutes. But 2 to 4 minutes, 2 to 5 minutes, that zone I'm really trying to get as fit as possible over, in the hope that brings back some of that anaerobic capacity, the high-end aerobic capacity, the muscle recruitment that will allow me to then open up and run hopefully a quicker marathon towards the end of the year. So that's the basics of what we're doing in the first six or seven months.
Can I just throw one quick thought out? It's really my fault. You're exactly right. I go to the 800, and it is partially because you used to be an 800 meter runner, but it's also because we talk about how for your marathon performance, every single checkpoint along the way, whether you're running a mile, whether you're running a 5K, 10K half marathon, as we build towards Chicago this year and maybe some other marathons later in the fall, it's my conceptualization of what we need to do with your training is for whatever distance, we're working on the faster side of it, right? If we say that your 5K fitness is an aggregate of where you're at in the 1500 and where you're at in the 10K, that might not be entirely true. But for you, we're looking at that shorter distance race, right? For where you're at in the mile, my sort of, if we're thinking about putting you in better races in the mile, my thinking is how we get there is we work on 800 fitness, right? If we want to put you in an 800, how we get there is we actually work on 400 fitness. In every single situation, we're looking the speedier side of things because I think that's been the limiter in your marathons, right? And as we go towards the marathons, we're still just taking that philosophy of looking at the faster side of things, and we're just scaling it up as we go through the year.
Put, yeah. So the first 6 or 7 months is very low volume, and by very low volume, somewhere around that 60 to maybe 90 kilometers a week. I think there was a week last week that was a little bit more than that. So it's about 40 to 60 miles a week. But we're doing a lot of very high intensity work. So every third day, there's a workout, and it ranges from being very quick around 400 meter speed up to about marathon effort, LT1, zone 3. The reason why I think my confidence has even improved since we last spoke on a training talk call was because I was wondering, okay, if we focus so much on zone 6 and zone 5, maybe we can get down to running 153, 154 for an 800, maybe 152, 408 to 410 in a mile. That will be great. But will I then move up to the half and full and all of a sudden have lost a lot of that LT1 fitness? Yes. Now, we've spoken to that and I've been basically publicly sharing that. I don't think so. But that was really reinforced last week when one of the workouts that we're going to speak about, I won't go into it just yet because we'll start from the start of the block that we're talking about. I basically did a workout that to me would indicate I'm in about 222, 223 marathon shape. And
I want to maybe say, I'm not going to try and say that you're in 218 shape, but we talked prior to this session. We talked about how you think you can run, you were in 4 weeks out from 221, basically as a conservative guess. And the way I do the workout that you're referring to that we'll get into in a second, I don't think that it changes that fitness necessarily, but I think that it just puts all the more faith in it. And I think that I think I'm not really saying anything differently than what you were, but it's that we have all the more, when you made that sort of that estimate to me three-ish weeks ago, it seems like slightly bold. It seemed to you, you're like, I'm willing to say that I'm 4 weeks out from 221 fitness, but it still seems bold, right? I think that your session last week just makes it seem less bold and even more bought in and confident.
Yes. So let's start from the start of the week. You joined me in Boulder for a Moxie test with strength coach Keith Mueller. This is going to be on the YouTube channel the next couple of days. But Max, I guess let's hear from you over a couple of minutes or up however long you need. What is a Moxie test? I actually didn't really know much about it beforehand. I'd heard of it. And what did we do in the test and what did you take from it?
So Keith is, in addition to being a strength and conditioning coach, Keith, and I've had some conversations with him in the past, Keith is an individual who really wants to be and is doing a lot of hard work to put himself on, to some extent, the cutting edge of how technology is changing our conceptions of training. And I think if we look at one sort of aggregate source of information on this, if you're interested, is Matt, your good friend David Littman has a podcast with Olav Alexander Blue, or Boo, the Norwegian Method podcast. But the Norwegians have been using lactate meters for a while to enhance their training. But Keith has really bought into this idea of a Moxie test, which is muscle oxygenation or muscle oxygen saturation. To be honest, this is pushing the limits of my physiological understanding, also because it's just such a sort of new idea. But the premise is something that I couldn't agree with. I couldn't possibly agree more with, which is that our traditional metrics, you've got a watch and pace. We used this back in the day. We used to take paces during sessions because we're on the track and we can, a stopwatch plus a track means we know how quick we're going. Then we have the onset of GPS watches and now we know how quick we're going all the time. Something that is, now that the GPS watches are built with optical heart rate sensors, people like to look at heart rate. And then the next thing is power. And what we'll actually see, we're discussing moving forward, is that both of us have been working with a company based in Boulder called Stride recently. They make run power meters. If you're unfamiliar with what that is, power meters have been a thing in the cycling world for a while. They've been very commonplace for, I'd say, about the last 10 years, but they were put to use in lab settings for probably about 15 years before that as well, 15 to 20 years before that as well, starting in the late 90s. But the idea behind a cycling power meter is that it measures mechanically how much power you're putting into the bike. Now, behind mechanical power. There's also a thing called metabolic power, which is how much power your body is producing into the effort, which is not necessarily the same thing as the power that you're getting out of it. A stride power meter is measuring that metabolic power. But to sum it all up, all of these things are what Keith refers to as proxy metrics for what we're really getting at. And what the MOXIE test does is it's measuring oxygen levels inside working muscle. And Keith believes that this is really the essence of effort, right? You have a couple metrics. This is one of a few metrics. If you're strapping yourself up to a mask and you're taking your ventilatory threshold, right? And you're looking at gaseous byproduct that's coming into the mask, right? That's another metric that is closer to what is actually going on and is not really a proxy metric. So when I say proxy metrics, I'm saying that pace, heart rate, and power are great, and they all have their place in training. But to some extent, when we are working on our fitness, we're not actually working on moving pace, heart rate, or power in any sort of set direction. Those things happen as a result, but that's not what the goal of training and the goal of working out is. The goal of training is to be able to run at a faster pace with a lower lactate, with less gaseous byproduct, with less, to be honest, I think we need Keith in here to say, are we looking for less? I think it's more oxygen in the blood of the working muscle, right? If oxygen is leaving the blood at a level that the heart can't replenish, and we'll see this when we go over this in the YouTube video, but the idea is that if the oxygen level in the muscle is really low, that's a really unsustainable effort for the body, right? The body can't deliver oxygen at a level that is sustainable in order to continue the effort. And when you did this MOXIE test, we saw that at 4 minute K pace, you're well able to replenish the oxygen that your body's using for the effort, right? Inside the muscle. In at 3 minute K pace or a little bit quicker at altitude on a treadmill in a hot room, your body is struggling a lot more to hold on to that oxygen, right? So as oxygen levels in the muscle decrease, you're working on borrowed time, right? And how much time? You can work on borrowed time much more with less consequences in a 1500 than you can in a marathon. But either way, it's a measure of, all right, at this pace, you start to work on borrowed time. And we know that you're working on borrowed time, not from anything that's going on with pace, not from anything that's going on with heart rate, power. It's we can actually see the borrowed time that the body is dealing with by how quick it's losing oxygen in the muscle, in the working muscle, and it's unable to replenish it. Is that a decent intro, do you think?
I actually don't know. I think so. Keith explained it to me in the days before, and to be honest, I don't have the base physiology understanding to fully understand that. But from everything I've understood you say and Keith say, that sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's this idea that we're really getting at what it is we're trying to do in training with this. And it's a unique look under the hood, what's really happening in the body. And those processes are then reflected back in our sort of traditional metrics, pace, heart rate, power. But this is a look under the hood at what's really going on when we get those measurements from the watch and everyday training. So MOXIE testing is never, it's never really going to be something that someone does every day, but it's so new and both of us know so little about it, especially relative to Keith. I think Keith has some sort of a vision that training might move away, training at the elite level at least, might move away from proxy metrics and move closer to training on the actual physiological processes in the body, quote, under the hood, more directly. And the accessibility of this tech, maybe turning it into a wearable, is how that stuff is, how that process may occur. We're pretty far ways away from this. When we were doing this test, the way that it works is there are sensors that were hooked up to Matt's leg and arm, and they are looking literally under the hood, literally under Matt's skin, subcutaneously to see what's going on, in a similar way that if you check into the, if you're in the hospital, you have a meter on the finger that's going to give oxygen saturation or pulse saturation. I don't even know if I'm using the right terminology, but we actually use one of those as well. But the idea is that there needs to be an absence of light in order for this device to get an accurate measurement. And because you are sweating, it's held on with pre-wrap, and we had to continue applying the pre-wrap. Hopefully you didn't get sweaty enough that it let light in, but that's showing us that we're still far enough away from this being a wearable tech. But Keith wants to be on the forefront. He certainly is on the forefront. And I think it was a great experience for, I think it was a great experience for us to, for us both, you as an athlete and me just watching and learning. Yeah, you got to watch the Tokyo 10,000 meter Olympic final a couple of times on the TV while you were suffering.
That actually was really helpful, just having a TV in front of me with athletes running hard. I know that's a common thing for people. I don't run on the treadmill that much. And the treadmill I do have in the gym in my apartment doesn't have a TV in front of it. So I'm normally looking at an iPad, which I'm normally playing, I don't know, Netflix or something. I don't actually really use it that much. But it actually was helpful to have a bunch of people running in front of me really hard. It was inspiring. But you did
I chose to do that because I ride the trainer a lot on the bike. And I like to watch, I'll watch Tour de France clips. And it's not even about watching the race. It's just about watching them go hard while I go hard. So when Keith was like, Max, you can throw whatever you want on the TV, I was like, all right, let's watch Salomon Barriga just take it to him right here.
Yeah, exactly. So the test worked in a way that it was 5 minute blocks of effort with, was it 1 minute rest? I think it was one.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. 1 minute of pure rest. It wasn't active rest. It was standing rest.
Standing rest. And so you might already be listening to this, and this may actually already be on YouTube because it's coming out in the next couple of days. So if you're listening to this a little bit late down the road, you can actually see this whole thing on the Sweat Elite Training Sessions YouTube channel. And if you tune into this podcast in the day or two after it's come out, it will be out very soon. But it's 5 minute blocks, starting at an easy effort. So for me, I think I started at 8:30 a mile, which is about 5:15 per K. So obviously a pace that I would be really well and truly deep into zone one in Max's zones or the zones that we're currently using, very much jogging, maybe even slower than a normal jog for me. And then we got quicker every time. So we went down to 8 and then I believe it was 7:30, 7, et cetera. Yeah.
So one of the reasons why we started so slow is when Keith was distributing this test, I was watching the same monitors that Keith was. And we wanted to actually see that at such an easy pace, when you start running, let's say that you have 60% oxygen saturation in the muscle when you stepped onto the treadmill to start, right? If you start running at 8:30 mile pace, 5:20K pace, your oxygen levels actually went up, right? They did then start to decrease just a little bit, right? But your oxygen levels actually went up at such an easy pace because there's such a readily available, your body is so able to produce readily, to make oxygen readily available at that effort. So part of the reason why we started so low is because we can start to see the trends that then get really important as we get into higher intensities. But it was really interesting because we watched how your body reacted to such easy paces, your heart rate's in the 115s, maybe 120s. And we were able to see, all right, at such an easy effort level, what's happening with the amount of oxygen that's in your blood, right? And it was fascinating. So that's part of why we started so slow.
Yeah. And towards the end, I can't remember exactly how many stages I got to now, but it'll all be on YouTube. But I remember getting to around 5:30 and thinking, this feels about marathon effort now, which makes sense. Altitude 327, 326 per K on the treadmill was pretty hot in that room, which was a little bit of a hindrance, I think, to where I eventually got to. I dropped out a little bit earlier than I would have liked to. And I actually boil that down to being overheated, but I'll get to that. We went 5:30, 5:15, 5 minutes per mile. That was when I knew I was at true threshold or slightly above. So that's 306 per K. And I knew after that 5 minute block that I was probably a little bit above my sort of classic LT2 threshold. And I could tell that just simply by my breathing being a little bit heavy. I think, Max, you were standing next to the treadmill. Had you said to me at the end of that 5 minute mile block, could you do another 10 minutes? I'd say yes. Could I do another 20 minutes? I'd say no. So that was when it started to get hard. And at the 4:50 per mile block, I dropped out after about halfway. Probably could have gotten to the end. Heath did instruct me at the beginning to not get to 100% maximum effort. He said drop out at about 95%. I think I could have finished the 450 mile block, which is 3 minutes a K, keeping in mind altitude, warm room. But I dropped out halfway through that, citing don't go all out. I could have got to the end, but it would have been an all out effort.
I think the other thing too is once you, I think what I was watching was like, once you got to the point where you weren't sure, I think that there was a ticking clock on when you would stop. And this is very classic. I think that I can talk about my session this morning when I was doing 5 minute efforts at LT2 on the bike. Once you start to think that you've overcooked, either you've overcooked it or that there's an impending doom coming, it becomes very mentally easy to, I'm not faulting you for this at all because it was in the spirit of Keith's instructions for the test. But I think that you were thinking a lot about how hot you were and how much you were sweating.
The fact that the Moxie meter was slipping off my leg at the end of every rep because I was so sweaty says a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah. And you're just staring down the barrel of the timer on the treadmill. I think that, yeah, in a test like this, it's really tough. I think for VO2 testing, actually, a lot of people I know who do VO2 testing, they actually make it a pretty set habit of hiding all the numbers from the athletes during the test. Sometimes the athlete can see the watts. If they're doing it on the bike, sometimes they can see the watts or know what's happening in terms of the power that they're putting out. But the athlete normally doesn't get to see the VO2, the empirical sort of VO2 calculation that's happening in real time on the screen. They don't get to see the timer. Sometimes you might tell them how much time is left in the stage, but there's a huge psychological, Matt, you've been getting really into the psychological side of performance this year. You've come to some pretty significant breakthroughs on it. And as it relates to this, which is really high intensity lab environment type effort, I think there's a huge advantage to just being put in the dark and just say, go, just box yourself and go. If that's the goal, like a VO2 test, which is to go to failure, where a lot of treadmills that do VO2 testing have nets on the back so that you can fall back. I think the best thing to do is really just, and I think of this when I'm on the turbo trainer on the bike, doing a hard effort, basically just let your vision go about as minimal as possible and just fucking hammer and just no thoughts in the brain, make the pain your friend. And in a lab environment, it's really tough to make the pain your friend in that sort of way. When you're well above LT2, you're sweating a lot. If you were not getting poked and prodded and staring at timers and you were told to go all out, I think you can tunnel vision yourself into the hurt locker a little bit more. I think last K of a 5K and really get there. But we did what we needed to do on the day and we got a lot of good stuff out of it. So I think it was super fun.
I couldn't agree more with what you just said. I think the overheating, I am actually making excuses for not going further. I am. I think the overheating
part. It's not an excuse. You're just explaining.
Definitely.
You're just explaining the stuff. Like, it's not an excuse. It's just like, dude, you know, one of the first things I learned about you as a runner is you're like, dude, as soon as it goes, like, you're like, as soon as it goes above 60 degrees Fahrenheit, I suffer.
Oh, that, and, I would say 55.
And so it's not an excuse. It's just how your body responds. But sorry, keep going.
Yeah, no, I guess there's not much more to add there. It was an interesting experiment. We'll see what the results we get from Keith and in terms of what we can actually do with that information. That was a question I asked him before we did it. And I'm still not super clear because I feel like we've got our zones pretty down pat now in terms of just general feel in terms of running at every zone. But let's see what we learn from it. At least it'll be good viewing on YouTube. But let's move on to the next workouts because I know, Max, you've got a busy day today with training and also with some physiotherapy appointments. So a few days after that, I did the max special, the zone 6, 10 by 15 second hill sprints that actually ended up only being 6 because sometimes my work does take priority over my training. I've made that very clear. And I did a full day in the life of video on the Monday with Jason West. On Tuesday, I was filming quite a lot of the day with some Tin Men guys. And on Wednesday, the day that I had my hill sprints, my zone 6 max special, I was with Gwen Jorgensen all day from 7:30 till 5 in the afternoon. And I was very tired. I filmed a bike session where I was riding on an electric bike with her in the hot sun all afternoon.
Her training days are long. I've joined her for a few of them. She gets up and gets after it and she rests a bit in between, but her days are long. She is basically going from breakfast to dinner.
Yeah, that's what we did. I turned to the pool at 7:30 and I said, oh, you're here early. And she said, no, I'm not. This is late. And I said, okay, fair enough. But it took us all the way to 5 o'clock, procrastinated for an hour or so at home, just trying to figure out how I was going to get through this whole session. Then I decided, look, I'm going to get out the door, do a 5K warm up and just do as many as I can until I just generally feel too tired. And that ended up being six. So I did six by, actually ended up doing 20 second hill sprints. I figured that was, there was a hill very close to where I was staying in Boulder that was like a perfect sort of roughly 5 or 6% gradient. So I did six by 20 second hill sprints, but you've always said it that anything between that 15 and maybe 45 second amount of time is pretty good. But I guess before we move on, let's get a clear answer from you here, Max, because I think you have covered this a little bit, but what is the shortest distance or time to do zone six workouts? And what do you think is the longest one? I know you touched on this once before, but just refresh me a little bit here.
This is zone seven. If we're really going all out for 15 seconds, that's zone seven. So remember, zone six actually ends at, I think it's pretty clear that a 70 second effort is zone six. It's pretty clear that a 20 second effort is zone seven. Where that line crosses between neuromuscular power, right? It's really, when does an effort in that 30 to 60 second range start to resemble a 100 meter sprint more than it does a 1500 meter effort? And I think that line could be different for different people. I think that it really just depends on your physiology. Specifically, I think it could depend on how much or how many type 2X or type 2B sprint fibers you're just genetically blessed with, right? If you're a really sprint heavy athlete, I think that zone seven is probably going to be, because your zone seven is more pronounced, it's probably going to be at a lower, if you're more pure sprint, then zone seven is probably going to start at a lower amount of, they're actually probably a higher amount of time. This is me trying to think through this. Because let's say you're a Usain Bolt, right? For a Usain Bolt, he is built with a really high concentration of type 2X sprint fibers. So for him, he can run a 400 on the same energy system that he can run, or pretty close to the same energy system that he can run 100 or 200. I think Usain Bolt did split 43.4 or 43.5 on a 4x4 several times. So obviously still world-class talent in the 400. This is a guy who a running internet question of the decade for a while was, what could Usain Bolt run for a mile? And I can almost guarantee you, probably not that quick, right? Like I can almost guarantee you Usain Bolt could not break 5 minutes for a mile. And it has nothing, it's not actually because, it's specifically because he is such a good sprinter that he couldn't, right? Going back to the Norwegian Method podcast with Dave Littman and Olav Bu, they talk a lot about how when Christian Blumenfeld and Gustav Iden go from short course racing to long course racing triathlon, they actually have to detrain their VO2 max in order to basically up their functional LT1. And it's a trade-off. For Usain Bolt to be that fast as a pure sprinter, 100 meter, 200 meter runner, he probably has the talent to be a 440 miler, right? But that's not what it's about. His body and the way it's trained is giving up so much on the aerobic side in order to do the anaerobic side. But going back to your question, yeah, I think that, well, can you rephrase your question to me in terms of, you have the effort length, but you have the all-out effort that's represented by that, right? So you can do 100 meters at 400 meter race pace. You can do 200 meters, 800 meter race pace, right? But those are different durations, right? Like you're talking about 10, 15 second effort at a 50 second duration, or a 25 second effort at a 150 duration, right? So put it to me one more time.
Yeah, sure. I think I might be touching on zone seven more than I need to be. But in this particular case, I did six by 20 seconds up a hill, but I do think because I was fatigued, I let the effort be a little bit less. So I think I could have gone to 30 or 40 seconds on those hills. Now, this is not the best example of a workout to talk about because I had a massive day of work and I already had two massive days of work beforehand. But let me just talk about it in a general sense. Okay, in fact, let's just easily do this and say, in 2 days, on Friday this week, I have a Zone 6 workout planned 3 days before the Boston Marathon. Now, what do you think is specifically Zone 6? So let's give me some examples. And what is Zone 7? Because I want to make sure now, we've done an introduction over 2 months of getting into these zones, and I feel very confident in where we are. But I want to make sure now that I am touching on the right zone. So let's once again define Zone 6, because I know a lot of people are becoming very curious about this. I've been getting a lot of emails and a lot of Instagram messages about this.
Yep.
So let's once again define Zone 6, and then let's come up with a workout that I'm doing in 2 days on Friday that would be Zone 6.
Yeah. So I'll say I have all of my athletes, Sweat Elite Coaching Academy, know that I love hills. I love hills for a variety of different reasons, but because we're working on a clock, we'll save that for another time. What I'll say is I have a Zone 7 hill session and I have a Zone 6 hill session that I use with my athletes all the time. The Zone 6 hill session involves 40 to 50 second efforts, and the Zone 7 involves 10 to 12 second efforts. And for each of these sessions, the effort is pretty close. It is all out, right? Getting into the psychology a little bit, it is impossible to tell an athlete to do 8 to 10 reps or 8 to 12 reps of a given effort and have every single one of them be all out. That's not just how our bodies and minds are geared to work. If I tell you to do one of them and I promise you that you're only doing one, you will go way faster than if I tell you're doing seven more, right? So the effort, for all intents and purposes, is all out, but it's probably still holding something back every time, right? So that 40 to 50 second all out effort probably still is going to be closer to a 60 or 90 second all out effort if you were to be forced at gunpoint to hold it. The 10 to 12 second effort is probably still closer to a 200 meter effort than a 100 meter effort, right? 25 to 30 second effort instead of a 10 to 15 second effort. But I know that we're in the right zones there, right? Because whether those 40 to 50 second efforts are run all out 40 to 50 second effort or run at all out 60 to 90 second effort, I know we're in Zone 6, right? We're not inside that 40 to 50 or that 30 to 60 second range where it could be that 30 to 40 second range where it's unclear if we're in Zone 6 or Zone 7, right? We're in the Zone 6 side, 10 to 12 seconds. I know that no one's running those efforts at a pace that they can really hold for 45 to 60 seconds, right? It's going to be more unsustainable than that. So I know that we're in the right zone. So we did Zone 6. Zone 6 was Wednesday, April 3rd, but it could have been more like Zone 7. But the other thing too is that Zone 7 is really defined by, in some senses, it's defined more by what's happening in terms of the muscle fibers that are being put to use than energy system requirements, right? Zone 7 is an effort that runs on an energy system of lactate itself. Lactate is the fuel source. That's something to get into on another podcast. But with Zone 6 efforts, glucose is the fuel source, right? But for what we're doing here, I want to think about it more muscularly. If you are overly fatigued and you do efforts at a duration that falls into Zone 7, you will actually be in Zone 6 because you're not getting the muscular recruitment needed to put it into Zone 7. So if you're running 15-second efforts a little slow, you're probably in Zone 6. But if you're running 10 to 15-second efforts really full gas, you're probably in Zone 7. So I think it's a question as to if on Wednesday the 3rd, were you really in Zone 6 or in Zone 7? And then I think that should shape what it is we're going to do tomorrow.
In 2 days, yeah. That's well put. I actually think I was in Zone 6 because I do remember thinking to myself at the end of that workout, I'm just really generally fatigued. I think the thing that fatigued me the most was the bike ride on the electric bike with Gwen filming her bike session. And I don't think I was really, if you'd been at the top of that hill every single time after 20 seconds, six of them, and said, go another 20 seconds, can you do it? I could have done it. So I actually don't think I was necessarily in Zone 7. I probably was in Zone 6. So I think we'll be. I think that was not a problem. I think it was just a bit of a rare case of me being quite fatigued in general. So I think we're all good. But yeah, what do you think we should do in 2 days as the next Zone 6 workout?
As much as I love what we're doing, I still think that we're staring down the barrel of a marathon 3 days later. So
yeah, but the marathon's not a focus for me.
I know the marathon's not a focus, but I still have to admit that I have a natural born hesitancy to really do anything that's like super, super hard. Even though you've proven that you can recover from these efforts just fine, I'm still just, like I see that on the Google Doc. I see two blank spaces for Saturday the 13th and Sunday the 14th. And then I see Monday the 15th, Boston Marathon. And that's just in my head. And I'm just like, oof.
By the way, if anyone tracks me to see how fast I run, which could be absolutely anything, my number is 234. Very easy to remember. Go on.
Oh, nice. You might actually run 234, right? Because you're just running easy.
I very well might, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway. Oh, shit. So you think you were in zone six last Wednesday. So do we want to do, but it was more by virtue of fatigue, right? Yeah. Do we want to double down, do some intentional zone six, or do we want to do some intentional zone seven? I think either could be fine to recover from.
I think I'd like to stick with zone six.
Okay. So you did just do 10 by 90 second hills yesterday. That's pretty high zone five. I'm trying to think.
While you think about that, I'm just going to quickly share the workout that came in between the 6 by 20 second hill sprints on Wednesday, the 3rd of April, and then the 10 by 90 second hills that I did yesterday on the April the 9th. So on April the 8th, I did the workout that I was referring to before that gave me a lot of confidence that our training is really not losing a lot of LT1 fitness. I just came off the back of a long drive from Boulder to Provo, where I headed out to do some filming with Cole Hocker and Cooper Tier and their new group. And I woke up in the morning and thought, okay, I've got a Z3 workout. I thought I'll do 20K at a moderate effort around about LT1 zone three. And this workout really surprised me. I had no fixed pace in mind. I was at about 1,300 meters elevation, which is a little under 5,000 feet, but it was my prime racing training weather. It was absolutely perfect. It was 30 degrees Fahrenheit, -1 degree Celsius, no wind. I could not ask for a better scenario. When I ran my personal best marathon, it was about that. Maybe it was slightly warmer. So I did a 20K at around about 80% effort, and I went 330 per K, which is about 538 per mile. And it's worth noting too, that it wasn't a flat course. There was a few hills towards the second half. I kept it very well under control. And I do think if Max was standing at the end of the run and said, do that again, can you do it again? I probably think I could have. I probably would have liked to have taken 2 minutes rest to do it again, but I think I could have. And that's 227 marathon pace at altitude solo after a pretty heavy week of training. So that really surprised me. I didn't really look at my watch at all. I ran it at a steady state pace. I just thought I'll just really try and feel a marathon effort run. I do know that earlier in that week, you told me to do this workout a little bit slower, a little bit easier, and I did not do that. But I think the next, moving forward, the main reason why I actually think I did this at this effort was because I just wanted to have a little bit of a topper of marathon effort before Boston. I don't know, and that kind of doesn't even really make sense because I'm not even going all out of Boston. But I think I just wanted to, it was almost like
you have the same bias to it that I do. You see it on the calendar and you're just like, shit.
Basically.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. But I also think too, like if we can do when we're training, we're balancing optimal, optimization is not just physical. Optimization is mental as well. So if doing a workout zone three session that's around marathon pace, that ends up being a little bit harder than would be physically optimal. But what that does is it gives you faith that energy system is covered by your training. And now you can throw yourself a little bit more in deep into some of the other workouts, then it's still not a net loss. And I don't think you're saying it's a net loss, but I'm just reiterating, it's definitely not a bad, even if you went a little bit too hard, it's still not a bad thing, right? It's now, if you now have more faith in the rest of what we're doing as a result, then it's 110% a positive thing.
Yeah.
That's all right. So
definitely true.
I've got to hop out of here in a minute, but I got a couple ideas. So a couple ideas for zone six. I have a track session in mind, okay, and I have a hill session in mind. You've done a lot of hills lately.
I didn't think it's a bad idea to do hills though, because Boston will be hilly. I know it's so close to Boston 3 days before that it's probably not going to make a big difference, but I don't think it's a bad idea to do hills. But with that said, it will be a busy day for me because I'm going to be at Boston Marathon at a bunch of social events. I'll have to do it in the afternoon due to reasons that I'll explain next episode. I've got to drive in the morning and I've got a few meetings. It will be in the afternoon. So I probably prefer to keep this
Let's go over both sessions. So the first session is you did some 15-second hills, you did some 90-second hills. I like the idea of doing some 15s and some 45s. And we also, you haven't done a lot of 45s. If we want to just do pure zone six, we can just say 8 to 10 reps of 40 to 50-second hills. That's just probably the most standard workout that I use with my athletes. I couldn't really, I started doing that workout in high school, and it's one of the few workouts that have stayed with me for that stage of my life. I think, to be honest, I'm probably doing it for slightly different reasons than it was given to me at the time, but I still really like it. So that's one idea. The track idea, or that's a couple ideas, really. The track idea is it's only 3K of work. It's 5 rounds of 300, 200, 100. Probably a workout you've done loads of times. 300 is roughly about mile effort. The 200 is at 800 effort. 100 is at pretty close to all out. The 200 jog between each effort and 400 jog between sets if you need it. Nothing sexy. I think this is a good opportunity to round off the podcast with one big general truth of training that I really believe in, is that effective training is not always sexy. What Matt and I are doing right now is sexy by definition because it's a marathoner who's training for middle distance. But still, even the act of doing that is not, to be honest, the less sexy you're training, probably the better it is. Effective training is actually really quite boring. Effective training, to be honest, you can look at this. I think the workout video that you did with Talby a couple weeks ago, where he did you got a marathoner who's doing 16 by 600 at probably between 5K and 10K effort. That's not the sexiest workout ever. And that's the point, right? Is that probably if your training is focused on really sexy stuff that makes for great Instagram reels, it's probably not great training. If you want to watch the Sweat Elite YouTube channel, you'll see that what a lot of these top athletes are doing is they're just layering. The work is smart. The work is intentional. And it's only sexy when it comes together on race day. Lucky for the listeners, we're going to have some races after the Boston Marathon of shorter distances. Those are probably going to be plenty sexy. But yeah, this 5 rounds of 300, 200, 100 session, very boilerplate, nothing crazy going on. Might run a little fast, but still, it's not, all right, let's go rip its 200 as quick as we can. When we rip the 200, we're still running at 800 meter pace, right? There aren't going to be any 25s getting thrown out.
Yeah. Awesome way to end it. Yeah. I know you're going to get going to a physio appointment.
We'll let the listeners know what we decided to do as far as that session. And obviously, next time we talk, we'll be recapping Boston as well. We'll have another interesting data point. It's not the end. No matter what happens, it's not a massive data point. It's just a data point. So to see how we're doing, check in on that really low-end engine, that LT1 engine, really even lower. And we'll see how we're going as we get into the sprint.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll speak to you all next week after the Boston Marathon. Once again, to track me to see how fast I run, which could be anything between 2:25 and 3 hours. My number is 234. We'll speak to you all next week.